Brian.
And I'm Reggie.
And this is R&B Talks, the official rainy day edition.
Reggie just informed me that it's not supposed to stop raining today, which makes me actually indifferent. I don't care.
I was hoping we'd have a couple hours so I could work on my deck, but apparently I'm not.
So yeah, it's supposed to have a couple hour break here, and then it's going to just start raining again.
Let it roll.
Yeah. So your deck will likely
be worked on tomorrow.
Indeed.
But you know what? In this new arc of life that I'm in, I ain't worried about it.
Your own golden arch.
My own golden arch. That's right. Thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate that. My own golden arch.
The Mick Kirby.
The Mick Kirby Deluxe. That's right. I miss that sandwich. I actually like that sandwich from the McDeluxe or the Deluxe sandwich when it had the tomato and the lettuce and the pickle.
Yeah.
It got rid of it, man. And now all they have is the Big Mac, which if you look at the Big Mac now and you order one, you can barely see the hamburger patties on it. I'm like, there's no meat in that.
Dude, no. It's like these little... So they called it regular meat and quarter meat when I was working at McDonald's back when I was a teenager. But if you made a Big Mac with the quarter meat, it was amazing.
Quarter pounder, you mean?
Yeah, like the meat that's on the quarter pounder. If you took two of those and stuck on the Big Mac. Oh, yeah. That was it.
You know, here's my problem with McDonald's. It's the same problem I have with a lot of other places. And it's the reason why if I get a fast food burger, which is super rare, I get a Whopper. Well, reason being, McDonald's is always trying to try something stupid. Like, here's the McRib Deluxe with Big Mac sauce and Swedish Burman pickles on it. I don't want that.
Burman?
Why is that a thing? Why is that a thing? Can I not just get patty, cheese, a little bit of mayonnaise, a little bit of ketchup, some lettuce, tomato, and pickle, and let's just call it a day? No, you got to put all the garbage on my burger. Please stop.
That's a quarter pounder, bro.
Although I did make Hatch chili burgers the other night. Holy smokes.
Well, good. Here's the thing about all this. Like, look, it's a fast food burger, man. It's not good. It's not like that's a good thing. Like, I grilled out burgers yesterday, right? Just like some Angus beef patties I got from the grocery that actually said the ingredients were just beef. It didn't have any other ingredients.
Yeah. Don't you love it when it says ingredients? Meat.
Yeah. Or it says like soy and you're like, anyway. So like it was one of the few that actually said it had just meat, just beef. I mean, so I just did those on a really hot grill yesterday, and they're better than anything you can order around here, dude. It's crazy,
dude. There's nothing like a really, you know, 3/4 inch thick burger on a very good home like a bakery bun with some homemade lettuce and tomato. I tell you what, I like to throw a little barbecue sauce in the mix sometimes. You never know, right?
Yep.
But you know something? I did read a study the other day. This will be interesting to our people since we are purveyors of the masculine. They are attributing the drop in testosterone in America to the high level of soy dilution in the normal products that we eat.
Well,
because soy is becoming a substitute for other ingredients.
Yes. And there's the actually when my son was growing up, he was lactose intolerant and they were giving him soy stuff and he was having all kinds of problems. When they took him off of the soy stuff, all of a sudden everything got better.
The problems mysteriously went away.
Yeah, it's crazy. Imagine that, you know.
Yeah, who knows, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I was talking to a friend of mine at the gym the other day, and you know, I feel like everything that's created at this juncture in our existence, and this is going to sound like a very paranoid thing today, but again, we talked about, you know, conspiracy theory, what used to be compared to what is probably the truth now. I feel like this is a very broad spectrum elimination plan for testosterone and masculine development. I really do. Like the way they're raising food, the food they're feeding,
the lab grown meat,
all this stuff is a direct, you know, headshot at anything masculine, right? Like I just don't feel good about it. if that's the proper way to discuss it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a deliberate. Okay, here's the thing. You could say like, okay, this seems like it's a deliberate plan, but I don't know if they're smart enough for that. I really don't. I mean, it's like, I think it's just like they've been shoving so much stuff against the wall to see if, hey, what'll work to help lessen the masculine influence, to help divide the country, to help do this and that. You know, that's probably what it is, really. But, and everything's so disconnected too. But yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing back, even going all the way back to the food pyramid, I think we're, it's just ever since we've had like the industrialization era and we've moved from the 19th century to the 20th century to the 21st, I think it's just been continual. Just like, how can the rich get more rich and the power get more power? And I think that's part of it, dude. It's just mechanisms of the elite, of the global cabal.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I will say this though. I don't think a lot of it is the spaghetti at the wall either. Cause a lot of times you'll find your way to the source that created it.
Yeah. Right?
Which, by the way, there's a new movie on Netflix. It's a PG-13 movie starring Jerry Seinfeld and Melissa McCarthy. And it's about it's a comedic view of the combat between Post and Kellogg's in the 60s and 70s. I laughed at the trailer so hard I had to take a break. So I'm hoping that this will be a very good movie. But it's literally about when Kellogg's first invented a shelf-stable food that didn't need refrigeration, which was basically the Pop-Tart. The movie's called Unfrosted because the first Pop-Tarts were unfrosted. So I'm hoping that'll be funny and also educational as to the hot garbage that they put into your body. But hey, maybe not.
Speaking of hot garbage.
Go with it. Lay it on me, baby. I'm a hot garbage
man. The Biden and Trump debate.
That wasn't a debate. That was a leg wrestling match between two people with no legs. Look, if I didn't like Trump before, I definitely am not a huge fan right now. Look, I'll be honest. If Trump's my option, I'll vote for Trump just because of what I think, you know, at this point, lesser two evils. I feel like he did a good job as a president on a lot of things, but also feel like he, you know,
there's a lot of
dropped questions. A verbal hot turd about every other minute, right? So
see, but I don't really. This is the thing. I don't really care so much about the verb, like his tweets and stuff, because yeah, I mean, like he's not cussing at anybody on tweeting in his tweets, but he is being really direct and he's kind of being rude in a lot of ways, how he presents things. Sure, would I rather not do that? Yeah, would I rather our president not do that? Yeah, but. If he's getting things done in the White House, at least he's doing that.
Well, my big thing is this. Okay, so you're the president. I remember growing up, you know, I grew up through the Reagan era. Right?
Really? Reagan's who I remember the most.
That was the majority of my years, formal, you know, developmental years was Reagan and Bush, right? And then Clinton. I will say, honestly, there was a time where whether you liked our president or not, you gave him the respect due to his office. I am not a fan of the current condition, and I don't like Joe Biden. I mean, I believe he's completely inept in every way. I don't believe that debate was the quintessential chess move for the Democratic Party to replace him at the Democratic National Convention, which means you paraded a man with either Alzheimer's or dementia out into the public and embarrassed him so that you would have a reason. So I hold the Democratic Party as liable as anyone else for that. But we just have horrible choices, right? Just horrible choices.
We just don't have good choices.
Like, dude. And you couldn't have put a more burningly bright spotlight on it than that debate.
Yeah. I think people I think people really need to understand that this was purposeful for one. You can't tell me that Biden's advisors that are in his close cabinet and all that kind of stuff. Those are not stupid people.
No,
they're really bright. They're at the top of the game here.
Yeah.
With things, you know, they knew all about this. They're working in conjunction with a plan for a certain something, right?
Absolutely.
So I mean, that's the thing. You got to understand. This is all exactly like you said. It's a chess move.
Yeah. It's a game. It's a playable game.
And Biden's the one who has to like get up there and act like a fool.
Well, and the problem for Biden is I don't think he really realizes that he's looking foolish. I believe in his Swiss cheese riddled mind that he believes that he's doing a good job, which makes me even more sad for him. That he in his mind is like, man, I went up there and, you know, kicked a touchdown field goal.
Because that's what they're doing. They're pandering to him.
Yeah. And now what you've got is you've got this toxic mixture. And this isn't even about the debate anymore. Now you have this toxic mixture, as if our government wasn't toxic enough already. You now have this toxic mixture of not only, you know, biased media trying to cover up what happened and paint him in a way that doesn't make him look like he's incapable, but you now have higher up officials in our government who were covering for him over the last 3.5 years who have now said, yeah, dude, I can't lie for you anymore. So now his party's turning against him. He literally, I've kind of been watching this closely just after the debate, not during the debate, but when your press secretary comes out and says something, and then your president comes out the hours later and literally says the reverse. I mean, if I was Corinne Jean-Pierre, I'd be like, I got to go. I'm going to go get me a job at MSNBC, giving my opinion for $1 million a year, right? Because I'm not going to take, because she was giving a beating for a long time. Now she's taking a beating because she can no longer make valid excuses to cover up what's going on. So there's just a, you know.
But here's the thing. I have zero sympathy for this crap.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, you guys mixed the toxic stew. Now take you a big spoonful of it.
I mean, look, this is what they've spewed all this and done all this. You're complacent if you're involved in it, doing that. No. This is your mess. This is your circus. Enjoy.
You know, and to be directly complicit in the breakdown of the government to me is almost a treasonous act.
It is a treasonous act, but I mean, right? And you could label that on all kinds of leaders we've had, to be honest. But no, I just think that we have to understand as a people that, you know, your votes and stuff may not be counted correctly.
Yeah.
There's corruption everywhere.
There's corruption on every single level,
local, state. It doesn't matter. Federal. There's so many contracts. This is the thing. There's so much money involved with like government contracts here and there, and it's you wouldn't understand the amount of zeros involved.
Well, and if you really want to get a real good like tight view of corruption, Sean Ryan just did an episode with Robert F. Kennedy where he talked about the corruption in the CIA.
Oh yeah,
it's, you know, there's just a wicked amount of corruption on that government level that is just not recoverable, right? Like I can't go to them and say, "Oh, you just right the ship." I don't think you can right the ship anymore. I think Russell Brand was correct in his statement of our government is not savable.
See,
we got to start over.
And I mean, I don't know, and we don't know, but there's a lot, and it's too big. So it's like you really need to break it all down. In order to say, okay, how, and you look, it will take a lot of, so if you really had the resources and the, I would say the path to be able to write our government the way it should be, that's a very long process that is gonna, it would, the ripples of that would be huge, but. Yeah. Will one day that be realized and necessary? I don't know, but yeah. Anyway, so you know, I really felt bad for Biden for a minute, but then I realized who he was, and I didn't.
Well, and I think we're at a point now where I don't think really feel bad for him helps him at all. I think at this point, dude, like, you know, one of the things I've noticed, and I've had relatives who suffered from dementia and Alzheimer's, is from time to time, they'll have a moment of clarity. You know that at one point or another, he's had to have a moment of clarity where it's been like, oh, crap. Like, did I say that?
I don't think so. Biden throughout his career hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been that guy, right? Yeah. So, and he's not really, he's been like a bumbling guy ever since he was in there.
He's been a dingus for most of his career.
That's what I'm, I mean, you know,
like a wicked dingus.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, agreed. So getting on to moving on to another important thing, the Chevron doctrine has been struck down by the Supreme Court.
The Chevron deference doctrine.
Yes.
Let me read this real quick. The scope of the Chevron deference doctrine, and this will explain kind of why it's important for people to kind of know what's going on, was when a legislative delegation to an administrative agency on a particular issue or question was not explicit, but rather implicit, a court may not substitute its own interpretation of the statute for a reasonable interpretation made by an administrative agency. In other words, the government was controlling the information that the Supreme Court was using. Because if you look at a lot of these implicit things that they were required to make judgments on, it was very, very steered by government agencies. Yeah. And now they're allowed to step away from that and make their own interpretations based on the actual facts of whatever's in front of them. That's the way it should have always been, right? It should have always been that way. And now it's not. And unfortunately, we are. I think what's happening here is this really big domino effect of, you know, we had these panels that were blocking our view, and individually they're dropping.
Well,
and this we're seeing.
I think this whole thing with this, because the Supreme, keep in mind, the Supreme Court is what keeps the powers in balance.
Yeah,
in that it's the Judiciary Committee that is constitutional based that judges whether or not this is according to the Constitution. I think if I'm paraphrasing that correctly,
I think you are. I believe you are listening to you.
So what happened was one of the beautiful things about the Trump presidency was that he was able to get three Supreme Court justices in there that were not as much attached to the Marxist agenda.
Yeah. And you can actually tell through the decisions that have been made over the last 3.5 years how that's actually affected us in a positive way.
Yes. So. But see, the Chevron thing is important, though, because – and I'll get to some of this, but we have been giving our departments and agencies too much power to stipulate what the law means themselves.
Yeah, to interpret laws – you know, I think the best way I've heard it said is to interpret laws by emotion and feeling, not by application.
Yeah.
And that's not okay.
No.
Because the rule of law is what keeps us from being, let's just say it keeps us from being Venezuela, which is on fire, still is on fire right now. So I think this is super important because we don't really realize the magnitude of the ability for a department to affect a decision when they choke down the ability to gather information to one place.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't work that way.
No, I mean, if the agency that's going to benefit from a certain statute, if it's interpreted a certain way, yep. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to interpret it the way that helps that agency, gives them more reach.
And a state court kind of example of that was the judge in New York that spoke to the jury. He was interpreting majority law with his own definition by going to them and saying, I know there's 12 of you, but if only four of you agree, we're going to consider that unanimous. That is a perfect example of funneling legality into a emotional state, right? I don't like Donald Trump. I don't like blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to squeeze this into a very narrow funnel so that I can get what I want out of it. I can interpret it the way I want. So, and you're also seeing it on a federal level with several things. So, you know, a huge example of that would be our interactions with China. I mean, we're interpreting a lot of the things that are going on based on, we want to give you a hug and be your friend.
Yeah,
you
know, I know.
Pass.
But the thing, let's getting back to the Chevron thing though, I think it's funny how upset the left political wise is on for this matter. Like, they're just freaking upset, dude. Like,
yeah.
Holy cow. And really, if you think about it, well, why are they upset? And Politico actually says kind of something why, because this whole thing kind of puts in jeopardy this student debt relief, policing AI, clamping down on carbon emissions, healthcare, transgender protection, and abortion. Those are all prime issues that could be impacted by this particular being struck down.
Well, and here's the thing too. Let's take Roe versus Wade, for example. When Roe versus Wade was sent back to the states, people who were pro Roe versus Wade didn't react with, all right, so we need to get our facts together. And if we want to fight this, we need to go fight this. It was this emotional explosion of, well, you're trying to take away my rights. No, we're trying to let the states be the states, which is what we were originally meant to do. And if you have a problem, you don't have to fight the federal government now. You have a much better shot at affecting policy change on a state level. But affecting policy change on a federal level is a much more difficult, much more involved, much more intricate thing to go on. And let's be clear, I'm not a fan of abortion. I'm not. I don't support abortion. I don't believe that at the end of the day there is any psychological, mental, emotional, you know, relief that's going to come from it. So, but I feel like what we did is we said, hey, you know what? You're fighting this on a federal level. Let's make this a little easier for you to be heard and give it back to the states where it's I don't want to say it's easy, but you're going to have an easier time fighting your fight. Fighting the federal government for anything is all out war. You've seen it over the last 20 years. Getting anything changed on a federal level is not easy. So again, like, let's narrow it into this emotional funnel, take the emotion out of it. Look, and I know that's hard sometimes, right? I know how things can get emotional, but you're not going to solve anything. You're going to make more enemies than you make friends by screaming at people and, you know, painting yourself purple and diving off the Washington Monument or whatever is the next crazy move they're going to do, right? So, yeah, there it is.
Right. So anyway, it's a big deal. It really puts everything back to the courts. And there's an argument saying that it's, you know, it's actually it's a power grab by the court system. But I mean, look, at the same token, I think at this point in where we're at, we've seen agencies have way too much control and power over things, especially like the OSHA and EPA, FDA, the ATF, any of these. So yeah, it's you know, I think it's a good thing, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll find out, right? Okay, so I picked this out because I want to talk about this because I need some education from my man, Professor Reggie over here. I want to talk about Carlo Acutis and the canonization of Carlo Acutis and the beatification of Carlo Acutis. I am utterly befuddled and lost in what is required for canonization and beatification through the Catholic Church. Because although I've read what I guess the framework qualifications have to be for someone to be, I don't feel like they follow those rules. So Reggie, take a moment and explain to me what you learned about beatification and canonization in the Catholic Church.
Right. So there's a three-step process.
Yes.
You have to be dead.
Well, fair enough.
So someone's got to die before they can be declared a saint. That person's life is then considered venerable. And that's a formal recognition by, I don't know if that goes all the way to the Pope or not, or if that's like the cardinals or bishops or somebody promotes that or something. I don't remember. In order for them to be beatified, is that what they call it?
Beatified.
They're blessed at that point. They must. That's because they must have taken part in a miracle.
Okay.
And then let's hold on. I got it written down. Canonization requires that a second miracle happen after beatification. After they're blessed, right? So when they're canonized, that's when they're full fledged saint.
Okay. All right. So my question is, what was the miracle that Carlo got into?
Okay, right? here it is.
I'm so bumfuzzled by this. I can't even begin to.
He was the Vatican recognized that he interceded from heaven in 2013 to save the life of a Brazilian child who was suffering from a rare pancreatic condition. This 4-year-old was healed after praying to Acutis and coming into contact with one of his relics, a piece of clothing. So he touched one of Carlo at Acutis's pieces of clothing and prayed to Carlo, and his pancreatic condition was cured.
Okay, here's where we run 100,000 miles an hour into the wall that I have with Catholicism. So a man dies, goes to heaven, right?
Or in this case, a 16-year-old.
A
15-year-old, sorry.
And let me be clear. I'm not attacking this guy. I read his background and the things that people said about him. And they were very, complimentary. He seems like he lived a really good life, really wanted to help the church, did a lot of good things. I commend him for that at that young age, because that's difficult at that young age.
Oh, yeah, right?
That's crazy. You're fighting against all the different things that we're fighting against just as teenagers and adolescents. So what I say to him is, good on you for living that kind of life, being dedicated in that way. I think that's amazing. But here's the problem. The heaven is not a pyramid scheme. God is not on top of this pyramid, and he doesn't have I'm going to let y'all handle these miracles, and I'm going to let y'all handle these miracles, and just pray to this guy and he might give you what you want, and just pray to this guy because he might give you what you want. This completely eradicates the necessity to ask for God's intervention, because if I can't just go to God, the purveyor of all things, the being that keeps us, sustains us, gives us life, if I got to go to his, personal assistant, what am I doing? Why is this even a thing for me?
Well, because let's be clear here. The early church, the diehard Catholics like to always point out, well, we're the first original church that Christ set up.
Okay, fair enough.
And they like to point this out. However, they don't. What they typically neglect is that there was all this crap added to the Catholic religion hundreds of years after Christ had already risen, and the apostles and all these other churches have been created. Like hundreds of years, you start adding all this nonsense from a bunch of other things. So here's the deal. Saints are like, part of the thing that they say about saints is that, you ask people to pray for you all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Right.
And they're saying that once you die, you go to heaven, you're alive in Christ. You're still active in the church is what they're talking about. It's not like that doesn't go away. It's still the church.
Yeah.
So you should, praying to your a relative or something that's passed on, or whether it's in heaven, you're not really praying to them. You're just asking them to pray for you, no matter if they're alive or dead. Okay.
I like how you said that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. But at the same token, then you have this whole thing about this. I forgot where it's talking about. I think it's Paul who says that, the prayers from the righteous are the just, or something is held in high esteem or something. Right.
Okay.
So if you, in other words, if you had like a man who's really living a holy life, a God centered existence, and they pray for you, it has some weight to God. Will see that as a weight, 'cause it's somebody who's actually obeying him and everything else.
Okay. Right? Fair enough.
So the idea of the saints comes from both of these places, where it's like, well, this person who lived was exceptional in the way they performed in their daily lives and all this stuff. And then there's these things, and they try to do this where now it's this, so it's an elevation of this. Okay, but the Catholics do say they don't pray directly. They're not praying to the saints. They're asking the saints to intercede on their behalf, right?
What's the difference?
However, let me say this. There is nothing that says you're not, when a human dies who knows Christ, mm-hmm. who's been born again yes. in Christ,
yes.
changes to anything other than a human that is now spiritual, living in heaven with God. There's nothing that says that they are now imbued with powers.
Yeah.
And
nothing.
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 So, and also too, they're still human. Like even Carlo here, as good as he does, was still sin.
Still a man.
He's still
born of sin.
He was not Jesus.
Yeah.
He was still that.
He had the sin of anger. He had the sin of all those things. There's even an example of him getting angry. I read a story about him where he got angry. He sinned in anger. I mean, this goes back to that thing that I have and this is the really bizarre thing that I can't get a Catholic to explain to me. And I really wish they could, because I would love to have just a great conversation and maybe I would learn more. But when I ask a Catholic, I'm like, okay, so you're praying to saints and to the beatified and all these things. If you can pray to them to intercede on behalf of God, why did Christ have to die? Explain that to me. Because his death was to be the ultimate intercessory for us to Christ. There was no need for anything else after his sacrifice.
I know, but they're just saying that
you know what I'm saying?
It's the same way we ask someone else for prayer.
You know,
that's what you're doing with the saint. But the saint, here's my problem with all this. For one thing, you're assuming that the space time continuum between the reality we live in heaven is connected enough where a human who is spiritual, and you're assuming like all these things after you die, you go to heaven, that your existence then allows you to be able to hear and interact with things that happen here,
yeah.
Which there's nothing that indicates that.
Well, I mean, and look at the Bible. Okay, so let's look at the Bible, all right? And then look at the books that weren't included. Even look at all of the books that weren't included in the Bible that weren't considered part of the canon. Nowhere in those books does it say Uncle Bob is going to go to heaven, and because Uncle Bob, you know, was right with God and was a good Christian and was a good man, that I'm going to, you know,
well,
grant him the ability.
They take in one of the other books. Was it Titus or Tybus or something? There's one of this other, it's part of the Catholic Bible, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, look, it boils down that there's a lot we could digest. There's a lot to like dissect here from the sainthood thing, but just know that I've never believed that sainthood is correct in the scope of what God's realm is. It just doesn't make any logical sense to me why you would have, and you would say after someone dies, we can declare them to be this saint, and then you can ask them for prayer to intercede on your behalf to Christ or God about whatever. That just doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't, and I know I'm Protestant, so I mean, hell, that's probably what they're going to tell me, but I don't know.
Well, but of course, right? I mean, everybody can, to some degree, defend what they believe. Can they explain what they defend is the actual, which, if I'm wrong, isn't that what apologetics is about?
Yeah.
Not just the defending of the faith, but the ability to explain your defense in a way that will give merit to what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's even on what amazed me was I was looking at Catholic.com, right? The mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
.com, I'm sorry.
their defense of this was weak. It was really, really weak. And a matter of fact, you have to really dig in order to find it. And now part of that is because the way the Catholic teaches and how they distribute information, it's like really, it's not like secret or anything, but they do keep that like, it's very much a top-down organization.
It's
really,
it's like a corporation. Like literally like a corporation. Like, you know, like there's financial promotions to being a Catholic. I don't understand that either, right? But anyway, we could literally climb down this hole.
Yeah, we may do this, an episode all on the Saints.
We may need to do that because this is a hole. Like when I went down this rabbit hole, I was like, there's no bottom to this, right?
Well, there's a lot to, and I would like to spend some time on that, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so Brian. Now we talked about the tech whiz who's now the
saint of all saints,
saint of the internet.
Okay.
Does God give us only what we can handle?
No. Let me say that again. Let me say that emphatically. Reggie, are you ready? No. No, that is not true. That is the biggest pile of garbage we've ever been sold. That's that feel good Christianity, right? God will never give you more than you can handle, Reggie. Wrong answer. And there are all kinds of examples of it in the Bible. David, Abraham, Paul, Peter. We can go down the list of guys that were under such a tremendous amount of stress that if they wouldn't have turned to God, it would have crushed them.
Yeah. Moses.
Yeah, even Moses. And Moses is a great example of this simply because Moses was facing a lot. Like, let's talk about, Moses murdered an Egyptian. The Pharaoh wanted him dead. He ran. He was under the stress of being on the run, right? Like, Moses walked in to try to free his people. And let's be clear, the Pharaoh put all the heat on Moses, right? But what did Moses do? When he was being crushed, he reverted to God, right? He didn't go in another direction. David, under the stress of being, tempted with sexual sin, committed murder because he couldn't bear the weight of the sin on him. And then he had to repent to God. There's so many examples of the weight being more than someone could bear. And, I'm not as strong as Samson. I'm not as wise as Solomon. I'm not as faithful a man at times as David was. So who am I to think that there's not something that God's going to put on me that I can't handle without him? It seems kind of against the fact that if you didn't need God, you don't need God. If I could handle anything that comes my way and I can be like, yeah, you just stay over there. I got this. I'm not who I think I am. Oh, I know that look. You had that look, that wisdom espousing look. I'm excited.
The reason why this would come and be interpreted as such is from a point of ego and control.
Absolutely.
And like that's really where this comes from is like, this is a false doctrine that is trying to make someone feel better about who they are.
Yeah.
About who you are, all this stuff is when none of that really matters in the scope of that. The whole canon of scripture says the opposite of what this is.
Well, Proverbs, I was reading through a lot and I've got a lot. But one of them that hit me really hard was a simple one from Proverbs 17:3, where it says, the crucible is for silver, the furnace is for gold, and the Lord tests hearts. The brutality of the crucible for silver, the amount of pressure and heat that comes in the furnace for gold, the comparison is right there. Our heart is going to be tested as if it is the most precious metal, right? So, the truth I can tell people is steel your heart with God, but be of the understanding that even steel is susceptible to damage.
Here's where this comes from. 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able.
Oh, show.
But with the temptation will provide the way to escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. So they're saying, because he says, you know, God is faithful who will not allow it. But the thing is, he's talking about temptation directly.
Yeah, for sure.
And I will say that this you have to see. This is why it blows me away that we're in 2024 and biblical stuff, and we're still taking things out of context. 1 Corinthians is extremely important to know the context. Okay, so let's take this back to the Church of Corinth. One of the things that were common in the Church of Corinth, or just Corinth, let's say that, was idol worship. Okay. And this wasn't just like a little simple something. This is like if you lived in a little town where everybody would do heroin, and they would peer pressure you into doing that kind of thing. It was part of the culture kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like it was that was that much pressure on the Christians in Corinth at the time to like fall into this temptation, right? So that's mm-hmm. that Paul is really addressing this when he's talking about, like, he even goes back and talks about the Israelites escaping slavery in Egypt, and how that was like how the generation of Israelites were cared for by God, yet they repeatedly fell into idol worship, right?
Yeah.
Well, God was still there.
Yeah.
And he still gave them a way out.
Yeah.
But they still did it. Okay. Yeah. So what a quote here from Jeffrey Curtis Poor is, Paul is telling his readers failure is not inevitable. They can get through this temptation and any other they face. He's giving them hope that they can resist. Okay.
Yeah.
The temptation. That's what this is talking about. Jesus was tempted, and being tempted isn't a sin. The actual temptation isn't. It's like what you do after that is right. So the whole thing here is that throughout. So if you look at the whole scope of the Bible, everything points to the middle of the Bible. And I don't mean directly in the middle, but I mean to Christ. Everything in the Old Testament leads up to Christ, and everything in the New Testament points back to Christ or his second coming. Okay.
Yes.
But it all goes through Christ. He is it. He is the focus, not you. And another quote here that I'll say, cause I thought this was very appropriate, was, oh, now I can't find it. Oh yeah. The gospel isn't a message of self-sufficiency. It's a message of self-insufficiency. It's a message of reliance on Jesus for his sufficiency, right? Mm-hmm. We need Jesus. We need Jesus not only to rescue us from our sins, but to walk with us through difficult and overwhelming circumstances. So it's when you have a problem and you really feel overwhelmed by something or whatever, it's going to be more than you can handle. And that's when you say, hey, God, I cannot do this.
I need the out, Lord. Help me out here.
Yeah. Right?
Well, I mean, look at the definition of the word perseverance. I mean, persistence in doing something despite difficulty, delay, or failure in achieving success. So to persevere doesn't mean that you're going to win. It just means that you're going to survive.
Yeah.
Right. I go back to this a lot, but growing up, I survived a lot, right? I survived a lot. I didn't not get to go through the trials. I had to go through the trials and feel the pain and the hurt and all the things that went along with it. But my perseverance was in the fact that I survived it and went on to find peace and understanding and salvation. I think that a better word for Christians at this point, because we need to kind of reverse this myth, would be tenacious. Fight regardless of failure, right? Be tenacious. To be in this delusional state of mind where, well, it doesn't matter that the house is on fire. God's not going to burn it down. I lost everything in a fire, and, you know, God didn't show up and go, you know what, let me put this out. I had to survive that and learn and grow from that. So one of these things that we as Christians look at is, you know, I hear this all the time is, well, I failed because I didn't win. No, that's part of the plan. part of the plan is for you to feel the hurt of the fail, to understand and know that not only are you still there and you can still grow and you can still become what you want to become and become better, but to know that if Jesus wasn't there, it's possible that the fall would be permanent. The fail would be permanent, but it's him who grants us forgiveness and the ability to come back from that failure and come back around. Right. So one of those things that I think we ought to think about more is let's get perseverance out of the conversation. Let's get tenacity into the conversation. Cause I've talked to so many people who are former Christians and they're, well, I tried this and it just didn't work. Well, how many times did you try it? Well, once. Well, yeah, that's why it didn't work. You didn't have any tenacity. You didn't have any
desire. You didn't have any faith.
Yeah. Which that's what it all boils down to is faith that it all happened for a reason. You know, I mean, I've had, you know, I'll take it back to this. I was a personal trainer up until 4 months ago, and I poured my heart and soul into that. Loved it. Loved my clients. Even if a client didn't stay, I still loved them, still wanted to see them succeed. But it didn't work out. And at first it was very demoralizing that it didn't work. When you put a lot of work into something and you work hard, but what I began to understand when the opportunity came to me to go do something else was that I had persevered through that trial for the next door to be opened. Right.
Yeah, right.
And God surrounded me with people like you and my wife who kind of helped me, maneuver through that very tumultuous, uncertain time. There was a couple of months there, man, where I just felt like I was wandering and I couldn't get an answer, but you know, God would intercede through you and my wife and through my wife's father and through my friend Greg, and all these people were pouring this wisdom and this encouragement into me. Not, oh, Brian, you can do it. You just go out there and kill it. It's, hey, man, maybe that's not what God had for you, right? Maybe that wasn't God's plan. So yeah, it didn't work out.
No, so let's put that in context here.
Okay.
It's not about your plan.
Yeah, it isn't.
That's the thing. Like, it's not about you.
Yeah.
At all. It's about Christ. If you really want to get into, like, I think that Romans chapter 8 is like one of the just pinnacle Christian doctrine books or chapters in the Bible. Starting from the very beginning, because there's no condemnation in Christ Jesus, right? For those who follow him, right? That right there is that should be a heavy, just this burden lifted off of you from that. So, but in order to get to that point, he goes through and talks about in 6 and 7 leading up to that point about how sin is like, really, it acts like a cosmic power over you that you're wrapped up to this, but like there's a way out of that, because it's really like you're a slave to sin until you die to yourself and rise again in Christ.
For sure.
Okay.
That's 100%.
So there's all this stuff in 6 and 7 that lead it up to about walking in the Spirit and all that, and sin and death. And that leads up to, if you're walking in the Spirit, there is no condemnation. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Well, that also means those who love God, all things work together for good for those who are called according to his purpose. Okay. So that's in Romans chapter 8 as well. All things for the good. God is orchestrating all things. So, and look, that doesn't mean you're not going to hurt or suffer or go through something, but there's a good purpose.
Yes.
Even if that purpose is to draw you closer to him, that is a good purpose.
There's a lesson. All right. So 1 Peter 1:6, in this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith may be for the result of praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Maybe the failure isn't a failure, right? Maybe it's just the plan. The faith, your faith is the plan. That's the genuineness of your faith. Man, that didn't work out. All right, God, what's next? Right? This isn't where you wanted me to be. And I had to really sit down and understand that that was where I was, right? Is that God was telling me, hey man, your purpose of this 3 years that you invested has manifested. It's time to move on. Whether that purpose is to make me closer to him, was to teach me a lesson in helping others, whatever that was, it was manifested into me for the reason of strengthening my faith and my belief. Right. I think we have this, you know, I go back to a lot of these influencers that are like, if you're doing this and you're doing this and you're doing this and you're doing this, then you'll not fail. I'm going to say it and I'm probably going to get ridiculed for this. That is bullshit. I'm sorry. There is God's plan for you is his plan for you. It may not include all of those things. It may include pain and heartache and trials and development that you don't even know that he's preparing you for.
Look, the Bible is clear. We're supposed to be glad in our suffering.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's a way for us to be closer to him.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. That's the Bible is very clear about that, because who suffered and who did all that at the most? Well, Jesus did.
Yeah.
So if his humility and his suffering at the cross is really where we're aiming for. Now, we're not aiming to be like hung up and be crucified, but at the same token, that's, we got to look at it like if the whole canon of scripture is centered around the central figure of Christ and what he did, how he died and was resurrected, then we must put everything we have into looking back at that figure, not at Christ himself. And dying, and what they mean by dying to ourselves, it doesn't mean like you physically
die.
Yeah, it's a spiritual act of saying, my old self is done. That self is buried now with Christ.
My old self is broken and destroyed because Christ has resurrected me into this new being.
Yes, I have a newness of life, as Paul says, right? And so this is critical, though, because like, operating in that space, it's a little easier to like figure out like, I'm getting tempted, or there's this happening. And you could almost, I'm telling you, man, like if you're in it and you're constantly working at being in the spirit, like it becomes almost second nature and you almost laugh at things, you know, it's like something happens. You just like, you just laugh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yet another,
yet another stomp on the big toe. You know, that's okay.
Yeah. It's okay. God's got me. It's cool. I'm just figure this out. Do what I can.
Well, you know, it's funny too, that, you know, the way God communicates, like my wife is a great example. Like she was next to me when I was in this kind of wavy crisis going between then and now, but she would speak such truth into me, you know, maybe this just isn't what you need. Maybe. And she was never, just stop. She wasn't like me. Yeah. She just wanted me to understand that maybe this just wasn't part of the plan. Right. But the one thing I want to communicate to people too is, we didn't starve. God didn't leave us destitute. Like, he had something else for me.
There was a way out.
There was a way out.
He had already paved the way out before that even happened. He'd already knew it was going to happen.
When my heart broke because I didn't get what I thought I was going after, once I understood that the heartbreak was necessary, he swung the next door open. So there is a purpose to it, right? You know, James 1:12, blessed is a man who perseveres under trial, for once he's been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who do love him. Bro, accept the failure as a step. Don't accept it as the end, right?
And also too, another key point here is, don't look at it as in the scope of just this existence on earth. This is what a common thing that comes about, because we only can see our life on earth right now.
Yes.
Like we're so short-sighted. So like for a Christian, you're talking about eternity here. Like you're really talking about, it's not really here. This life on earth is really the just such a small blip in the scope of eternity that is, I mean, come on. So if you think about an eternal mindset, that your the any suffering you even experienced in life on earth pales in comparison to the glory that will be revealed in heaven. And that's actually what Paul says in Romans 8:18. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter. Like, this is your life on earth. That is just the one little bitty, tiny, infinitesimal spot.
Modicum of what's coming.
That goes to the next, that is eternal place in heaven. So, like, you know, regardless of the pain and everything else, it's tough. And I've talked to people who have gone through some, had severe accidents that have debilitated and changed lives and all this kind of stuff. But if those people usually are stronger in their faith and actually have been closer to God through those experiences. And it's, you know, not that I want to have any of that done to me or whatever, but like, there's a purpose behind this stuff.
Well, and open your eyes to the level of the world, right? The level of what's going on around you. I think that a lot of times we become so self-focused that we're like, well, why is this happening? Dude, I can point you to people, and I won't use his name because I don't have permission, but he's a friend of mine. He lost his ability to walk, but you'll never meet a more centered and positive guy in the sense that, am I happy that this happened? No. But do I know that there's a purpose for it? Absolutely. Right. So just be, the best thing I can tell you is this. And the only thing I can compare it to is this. Everything is going to hurt a little at one point or another, right? Your relationships are going to hurt a little because you're going to have to fight to make them grow physically. If you're going to make everything has going to, pain is involved in anything. Anybody who tells you that you can live a life without pain is a literal liar. There's so much pain involved in life, mm-hmm. but it's the perspective with which you look at it. And if you're out there fighting against these pains and you don't have any spiritual basis, you're going to get swallowed. You're going to get swallowed in self-pity, in self-loathing, in an inability to see the good that is in your life. And people ask me all the time, Brian, everything you've been through, why do you believe in God? Because God has given me the centered, Christ has given me the centered reason in my existence to understand that all the pain, all the suffering, all the disappointment, it's purposeful. It's to teach me, it's to grow me, it's to steel me against the world.
Yeah.
And to make me stronger as an individual. And let's be clear, I say this all the time. I am not perfect. I fail constantly. I struggle with things. But I'm always listening to God, right? I'm always listening to Him tell me that it's okay and that there's something better for me out there. May not be until I'm 60. I don't know, but I'm going to follow that trail because it has taken me to gifts in my life that I never thought I would have. And it's given me peace and solace that I never thought existed.
You know, the thing I look at a lot is like when you're a parent and your kids, you kind of want your kids to go through some things so they experience something so they're not caught completely just off guard when something much worse happens later on.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's 100% the truth.
I mean, you know, so like even when it's like, oh, you're, you know, like my daughter will leave their a stuffed animal out or something and my dog gets a hold of it and rips it to shreds. And it's like, well, there's a lesson to be learned here now, isn't there?
There is, right?
You know, I mean, it's
yeah. Even when you discipline your kids.
Yeah.
You're not disciplining your kids because you want them to hate you. You're disciplining them because
there's a consequence.
They've got to learn that life is not built on a lack of consequence. You know, I go back to, I use this example all the time, but the repentant thief on the cross. You were forgiven, bro, but there's consequences.
Well, and, right? And too, like, look, if we're talking about 1 Corinthians 10:13, and it's temptation that we're talking about, that God says He will not give you more than what you can, temptation than what you can actually combat. He's there for you, that kind of thing. So let's bring this back to the 1 Corinthians 10:13 and talk Absolutely. About, look, if you got temptation, there's ways that for one, don't look at the temptation, look at God.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
Look to what will get you through it.
Don't allow yourself to be in no-win situations, for one. A classic example for me. Well, that's not really true, but because I never liked strip clubs in the beginning. I never did. I always hated them. But if I had a problem with porn and lust and stuff, then, you know, you shouldn't be going to adult places where that stuff's at, right? Don't do it.
If you have a problem with drinking, stay out of bars.
If you're an angry person, you're struggling with anger and like lashing out and stuff. I mean, then where are you at when you have these situations come about? Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, you know, there's some active things you can, and above all that, If you're really accepted Christ and you're picking up that cross and you're following him, then why aren't you praying to him? Where's your prayer life, dude? Why aren't you talking to him?
Well, and again, prayer is not always, "Oh Lord, bless thou." Sometimes, man,
it's real.
It's real. It's a real conversation. "Hey God, you know, I took one on the chin today. Where were you?"
But yeah, so look, fellas and ladies and whoever you may be,
and adults and
there's a creator for the creation, and he's still there, and we still have salvation into one that lived like we couldn't.
Exactly.
So,
and use your heart. Don't use your mind. Your mind will fail you.
That's actually the other way around.
He answers me more here than he answers me here. My will always seems to kick me around up here.
Well, the Bible clearly says your heart will lead you the wrong path.
Yeah, I know. But if I give it to him though, like I don't really, like,
but
I don't
you're
really,
making the mental. So on that subject, like the, what the text teaches us is like the heart is flesh and will pull you towards fleshly ideas.
Well, for me, maybe what I mean is, the heart that God gave me for worship. For him, like I have a heart for him.
But it still connects you to the mind. Like we always need to make sure that our mind is what the Bible says. So our mind is what connects us to.
Because in my head, man, I'm the worst rationalizer on the planet.
Well,
right?
I know, but we have our consciousness.
Maybe I should say my intellect, not my mind.
Probably not.
Because I don't think they're necessarily connected, right? Our intellect is... I find a lot of times our intellect is connected to our ego.
I'm saying there's no way I would survive without thinking through thoughts and patterns I feel or my emotions, unless it goes through filters through my mind that I think it through. Okay. Well, how am I feeling this? What am I feeling? Why is that good? Is that bad? Is that godly? Is that not godly? How am I reacting to this? Is that good? Is that bad? Is that godly? I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like my mind is always in the intercessor for what I feel and what my heart's telling me.
Well, maybe for me though, I don't know. I'm not very emotional.
Well, yeah.
So my heart doesn't really, you know, my wife will tell you this. She gets a little aggravated. I don't really connect on an emotional level with a lot of things. So I don't really feel like I store away like my sin that way. Like,
I am, man.
I do get angry, but the moment I get angry, my mind goes, "Dude, you're wasting your time. You're giving this person, you're letting this person rent space in your head for free." So back away from it.
Yeah, I have.
Right?
I do. So that's what I was saying. But like before we talked about this, like, you know, I have very high, I guess you'd call it empathic kind of thing. I feel a lot and it gets, I have to like consciously always think about what I'm feeling so I can level that out.
Yeah.
I always have to. Right.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we're on B Talks.
Like, follow, subscribe. There's a button. It's an oval shape.
On YouTube.
And on YouTube, and you click it and it says subscribe.
And there's a couple other things too, like on the podcast that we really appreciate.
Yeah, I have noticed that on the Spotify's we've got some more listens. You know, that makes me happy. I love the fact that one thing I'll tell you guys about this is Reggie and I didn't do this with any ego in mind. This is not about becoming famous or being riding the podcast wave. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good stuff out there. But for us, this is kind of a chance. We saw a problem. We saw an existent problem with men struggling with what they've struggled with, and then masculinity being pushed back and all these things happening. So our purpose for this was just to be a voice, right? Just to kind of give people the idea that you can live in this world and be a man of faith and not be ashamed of it, and use it to help you get through every day and to grow and to develop. And we hope, I hope for sure, that that's what we're doing here, nothing else. So
until the next time,
we're R&B Talks. See you.
Bye-bye.